Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. And later on Building Bridges, massive giveaways of contracts to Bush cronies in wake of Hurricane Krutina, while Bush suspends prevailing wage.
But first, be careful. Those flowers have blood-tipped thorns.
Acres and acres of row upon row, scratched in the face of the land, holding the hopes of the seeds we have sown deep in the cracks of my hand.
I can't help but say to begin this program that we are going to dedicate it to Brother Luciano Enrique Molina, the president of Sinatronal, who was assassinated on September 10th. Luciano was found tied with about 40 stab wounds and signs of torture. He was 45 years old and is survived by four children and his partner. He had been a labor activist for years and is the latest example of the fact that Colombia is the most dangerous country in the world for those who are involved in labor activism. And our hearts go out to those who knew him and to all those who struggle for labor rights. And with that, we have another champion of the labor movement of Colombia, Eduardo Parado Escobar, who's an executive board member of Sinatra Splendor.
The Dole Corporation is the largest producer of fresh-cut flowers in Latin America and the largest importer and marketer of flowers in North America. While Dole executives were attending a benefit dinner at Tavern on the Green, put on by the Social Accountability International, an organization that purports to promote social accountability standards that include respect for trade union rights, Dole is actively busting the independent workers' union Sinatra Splendor in Colombia.
Well, we're going to find out a lot more about what has been happening with Sinatra Splendor, and we are very pleased to have in our studios Eduardo Parado Escobar.
And we also have Jose Schifino, who will be translating.
And we have another sister with us, Allison Paul, with U.S. Labor Education in the Americas Project. And it's a pleasure to have all three of you.
Thank
Great
you.
To be here.
Eduardo, why did the workers in these flower plantations decide to form a union and ask Dole for recognition?
Porque ellos nos han dado el motivo de que a partir del primero de enero iban a dar todo por contrato.
Entonces, well, they basically told us that they were going to start contracting and having a contract for every worker starting the 1st of January. So 27 of us over there decided that we would form a union and collectively bargain. They were working 36 overtime hours a month, and they were getting 8,000 to 10,000 pesos for the month. Basically, what they began to do is they started a new efficiency program where they would ask 30 workers to do the work that had previously done by 50.
Let me get a handle on how big Dole is in flower production in Colombia.
No, la dos lleva la mayoría allá, prácticamente el que manda en las empresas allá. Habemos el... producimos el 60% de las flores, de los cultivos, ¿sí? Más o menos somos 6,000
hectares. Well, there's about 60,000 hectares and about 500 companies right now, Dole, which is the biggest. 65% of the workforce is women. Well, they're having problems now with the way the work is run and how the line is run. Basically, there's a lot of illness and a lot of overwork where people are moving very fast. And, you know, working with flowers, they get hurt and they get cuts and stuff.
By the way, what is the pay scale generally for the workers on this sped-up line?
Nosotros tenemos 417 mensuales.
417,000.
Sí, señor, 417,000 pesos.
417,000 pesos.
Now, Jose, you're going to give us an idea of what that translates into.
That translates into about, I think, about $200, $500, somewhere between that.
It's about $300 a month, I believe.
$300 a month. Now, what about in terms of the dignity and respect for workers? How are they treated in that sense as well?
No, pues en nuestro sindicato, como es el sindicato de obreros, nosotros éramos la...
Well, he says that as the union members themselves, once they started the union, the relationship with the boss became really bad, and they were treated like they were harassed and followed around and questioned all the time, and their work was questioned. So it wasn't a good relationship.
Del sindicato, le ponían que estaban mal las firmas, que no sé qué, que...
Well, they took a very long time. It took 10 months, and basically they were challenging the signatures. They were challenging the forms that were filled by the workers. They basically used delaying tactics for the last 10 months to stop. Well, they also opened up or started a company, a union, in which they were paying people like 4,000 pesos, giving them free trips in order for them to join the company union instead of joining with the worker-led union.
There was an accident on a bus. A number of workers were injured. I think at least one died in transit to the work. Could he talk about that accident and why the workers think that Dole bears responsibility?
Durante cuatro años nos recogía una ruta ahí en el barrio Chico. Después de un momento a otro la quitaron. Y después ya nos recogía otra que ya llevaba sobre cupo.
Well, for 4 years, we had the same bus line that was picking us up. They then changed it to a new one, and that bus, when it started to pick us up, would come with more people on it than before. It was overloaded at all times. And he was traveling, the driver was traveling at a very high velocity. The company actually discounts the price that they pay for each worker on the bus if the driver makes the trip in over a certain amount of time. So they have a control on the speed that the drivers get to and from their destination, where they pick them up and when they take them into the gates of the plantation. Well, they had actually people hanging off the edge of the bus in the doorways, holding on because they couldn't get in. And when the bus struck at high speed this truck, everyone who was in the door flew out and three died. There were the three deaths and 55 wounded. Some of them are still in the hospital. There was amputations and people with severe head injuries. People are still suffering very much from this. We are hoping that the company responds to these people who probably can no longer work and are now have a disability for life, and they take care of their pensions and make sure that they are able to live for the rest of their life and be able to eat. And there was, of course, the children, the orphans of the people who died.
Dole is, my understanding, under Colombian law, supposed to have a responsibility for providing the transport and thus responsibility if something goes wrong. Is there any indication that Dole is willing to bear responsibility and support these workers who have been maimed and the families of those who have died?
No, pues hasta el momento no. No hemos sabido sobre eso, pero eso, todo eso para que nos...
Well, they said that, yeah, they still haven't really heard anything, but they've, for the last 10 months, they've been going to Bogota, to the capital. They've been doing strikes, they've been doing demonstrations, and they've been taking it to the company, demanding reparations for these people.
What generally do our listeners need to know about what they can do to support the efforts of the Sinertra Splendor workers and Colombian trade unionists?
Sí, lo que necesitamos es la, digamos, para la gente de los tres muertos.
Well, he basically wants for people to be aware that the biggest situation in the campaign right now is these people who were wounded and who were hurt, and also the fact that the way the line is being run now with the speed up, that this is not humanly possible. People are just getting sick and they're getting injured all the time due to the fact of the speed which they have to cut flour.
Y escribir una carta a la Dole.
And write Dole a letter and let them know that, you know, these workers need to have a collective bargaining agreement and they need to have safer and better working conditions.
Allison, tell us where people can write.
If people are interested in learning more background on the campaign and also want to take action by writing letters to Dole, you should visit the website www.usleap.org That's spelled wwwuslaep.org.
I wish we had more time, but I'm glad that we had some time to share. And as I said, there is special accolades that are due to our sisters and brothers that organize in Colombia. It is the most dangerous venue for organizing in workplace situations in the world, and our brother has tremendous courage. And Dole, you better shape up, or we're gonna continue to build these international movements to pressure you. And thank you very much to our brother Jose Chavino and to Allison Paul, and most importantly to Eduardo Parado Escobar. Support those who organize in Colombia.
And a cold cup of water, and a cold cup of water, just a cold cup of water.
I'm mad as hell, and I don't want to take it anymore, and that has to do with all that's involved with Hurricane Katrina and the non-response to begin with, and as far as I'm concerned, currently with the government. Actually, the government is making a response now, and it's a negative one, and we have to fight like hell to make sure that there is some justice, some compensation, some remuneration for our sisters and brothers who have been so devastated by this hurricane. And with that, I'd like to tell you that we have two guests who are going to help us understand how to formulate demands and what must be done. And we have with us David Donnelly, National Campaign Director of the American Progressive Action Fund, and Jared Bernstein, Director of Living Standards Program Economic Policy Institute. I should say that we have Jared for a limited period of time, so we're going to begin with him.
There are big bucks that are going to be coming to New Orleans, to the whole Gulf State region. Big business is lining up for the contracts, and there's going to be loans to small business. How are the workers going to make out? How is the prevailing wage situation going to be there? What about minimum wage?
Well, the minimum wage, first of all, remains $5.15 at the national level. Here's an interesting point that listeners may not know about. The city of New Orleans actually voted to pass a higher minimum wage for the city. I think it was maybe $6.15. And the citizens in a Democratic election voted to make that their city-level minimum wage. But the Louisiana State Supreme Court, this is a few years ago, struck down that election. And so I'm sure the situation that we're looking at now would have been somewhat alleviated had workers had more earnings. As you correctly pointed out, there's going to be tens of billions, probably something between 150 to 200 billion before we're done, dollars flowing to the Gulf Coast region to reconstruct the damage from the hurricane. Right now, we see a couple of big problems that you alluded to in your introduction. First of all, these are mostly no-bid contracts, and predictably, they're going to some of the big contractors, the Halliburtons, the Bechtels, the usual suspects. Secondly, the White House has already suspended prevailing wage laws that ensure that workers on these big federal contracts earn the wage that prevails in their area. Now, this is particularly important in this case because some of these areas on the ground, there's really no recognizable labor market to speak of, so the contractors can set the wage. What you really see here is kind of a tilted approach once again where it looks like the haves are making out a lot better than the have-nots.
And from what I see, even the prevailing wages aren't that high in that area.
Right. I mean, the prevailing wages are, as they say, these are the wages that are typically paid in the relevant industry. So a truck driver on a construction site in New Orleans Parish might make around, $10 an hour. If you look at some of the workers doing different jobs in the construction field, they range from, probably $8, $9 an hour up to 20 or so. I think a crane operator, fairly high-end skill job, a crane operator in the area, earns around $20 an hour with fringes. You know, that's certainly an appropriate market wage for such workers to be paid. In the absence of prevailing wage rules, you have to worry that these workers will end up being paid less. There's also, by the way, no local hiring rules on these contracts as of yet. That means that contractors can bring in whomever they like for whichever job. I think it's a critically important component of the rebuild to put local hiring preferences into the contract language.
Is there any indication, to your knowledge, that this is being done? Because what I see is concern about the prevailing wage and getting around it. What I see is suspension of Davis-Bacon. What I see is money committed at the expense of programs. Now, one can guesstimate that the programs that will be cut to finance the effort will be those that are beneficial to the poor, since they've already announced the drug prescriptions, et cetera, for seniors around the chopping block. So,
I'm down in Washington, D.C. here, so I am, I've got my ear to the ground on this stuff, and it's an interesting scenario that's evolving. Before Katrina hit, Congress was on recess. They were prepared to come back to D.C., initiate $70 billion more in regressive tax cuts, primarily cutting taxes on capital gains and dividends. So once again, tax cuts for those at the top of the wealth scale. At the same time, they were poised to cut $35 billion from Medicaid, food stamps, school funding, exactly the kind of safety net programs that you need to have in place, certainly in the pre-Katrina world, but even more so in the post-Katrina world. So this is what they were planning to do. Now, they have had to take that agenda off the table because with poor people essentially perishing, on the front pages of newspapers, it seems a little out of touch to come back and just continue business as usual. Now, the problem is, what happens when those pictures end up in the middle of the newspaper instead of the front page? Does their agenda come roaring back, or I shouldn't say, probably more like, do they try to sneak their agenda back under the radar? So one of the really important initiatives right now is for members of Congress and think tanks like ours and advocacy groups and everyone who can find the wherewithal to become involved is to try to keep the pressure on. If those kinds of tax and spending cuts were inappropriate this month because of the realities of what we've learned, they're inappropriate next month and years 10. So I think that's going to be part of our agenda at the Economic Policy Institute.
And let's bring David Donnelly, National Campaigns Director of the Public Campaign Action Fund, into the discussion as well. And one of his great concerns has been the Halliburton Corporation, Vice President Dick Cheney's former company, and the contracts that have been let to them and what the implications of that are.
I completely agree with Jared. The pressure has to be put on members of Congress and the administration to hold them accountable for how they proceed in this post-Katrina world. It's one thing to read about contract going to Halliburton that gets us all outraged, a no-bid contract to help rebuild some of the infrastructure down there, particularly in the context of how much money they've mismanaged in the effort in Iraq. The latest figure that I've seen is $1.4 billion that they can't account for. It's another thing to notice that approximately half the contracts that are being given out right now in the Gulf Coast region are no-bid contracts, and many of those contracts are going to companies that are politically well-connected and not necessarily the best qualified to do the work. And with the suspension of the prevailing wage rules, as has been discussed here tonight, the executives are making off with a lot of money, and the workers that are doing a lot of this very difficult work day in, day out, or don't have the wage protections that they deserve. It's got us so outraged that we decided to throw up a website and start a petition campaign to lobby members of the administration called HowDareThey.org. And it was spawned, a website was spawned after 9/11 when same kind of war profiteering was taking place when companies rushed in to get what they could get in the post 9/11 gold rush. We think the same kind of gold rush is happening now, and we need to call attention to it.
Jared, I know that you may be that you need to leave in a couple of minutes, so I just wanted to give you a chance to sum up your concerns about the, I hate to use the term reconstruction period, but what will be that effect of that on the poor workers in the region?
All right. Well, thank you. Let me sum up. And that's a great. That sounds like a great website. I'm going to visit that first chance I get. Two things. In the short term, we obviously need to take steps to ensure that those who were left behind the first time in the case of this storm don't get left behind again. here are three simple pieces that need to be in place, and this is language that needs to be written into these contracts. Local hiring rules, prevailing wages, which means we have to rescind the suspension. That means, you know, reimpose prevailing wage rules. And three, a training component. If you put those pieces in place and you help people relocate, you could actually change the career trajectories of some of those folks who have been stuck fending, trying to make ends meet in a pretty tough and impoverished labor market even before the storm hit. But then in the longer term, there's the agenda we were just talking about. The kinds of tax and spending cuts that this Congress is known for and that they were going to come back and implement before the storm, there was no place for them before this storm hit. It's just that we as an electorate, you know, hadn't really seen what the evidence for that kind of claim. Now we see it. You can't push it back. It's there. And so I just can't say enough about how important it is to keep the bad ideas off the table. There will be efforts by the tax cutters to come back with this agenda and to continue this relentless campaign to cut taxes, particularly on those at the top of the income scale. If we keep the pressure up, there's a chance that we'll be able to push back, at least more of a chance than there was a few months ago. Thank you for the opportunity to come on the show. I hope I can come back when I have a little more time.
We're going to make sure that you come back when you have more time. And David Donnelly, one of the things that Jared didn't mention that is another grave concern is the issue of affirmative action.
Yeah, I mean, certainly you can see the issue of race. You can see up close, and certainly one of the issues that my organization focuses a lot on is who's making the campaign contributions to members of Congress and to elect the president. And it's certainly not the people who are most impacted by Katrina. Certainly not those whose lives have been devastated. The poor among us are the ones that are bearing the brunt of this. And with the reconstruction effort of this area, we do need to pay attention to affirmative action, to local hiring, and to the training programs that were just outlined. That will help address some of the local inequities that we had seen in that region for years. And I don't think any of us can hold our breath and hope for the best out of this Congress. We have to advocate and agitate and try to push them to do what's right for this region.
So they're cashing in the cronies of Bush, of Cheney, hundreds of millions of dollars.
And it's really amazing how this debate has created this stark comparison between the people who have lost so much and the people who have so much that they're gaining from their long political relationship with this administration. And you look at one particular example that I just am amazed by, that Congress voted to increase the credit limit on these credit cards that are handed out to government contractors to $250,000 is a credit limit for some of these credit cards. And now the House of Representatives, a chairman in the Judiciary Committee, James Sensenbrenner, is refusing to allow an exemption in this new bankruptcy law for victims of this disaster. And you look at comparison between those two facts, that those who have lost everything and may very well need an exemption from this bankruptcy law will not get it. But government contractors who may have gotten their bid or a no-bid contract can go out and spend $250,000 on a credit card issued to them by the government and paid for out of taxpayer dollars with very little oversight of how that money is spent. It's an incredible dichotomy in our society right now of the haves and the have-nots.
And who else is bringing this up? Are the Democrats in Congress doing anything about this?
There are some Democrats who have filed legislation to try to create this exemption for the victims of the hurricane in the bankruptcy law. There's one Republican senator that has joined in, but with a weaker version. There are certainly some other advocacy organizations that are trying to raise this issue. But right now, there's so much effort focused on trying to get housing for many of the for the victims, to try to get people's lives back to some semblance of a routine, even if it's not in their homes. That a lot of the progressive organizations and a lot of the effort right now is just going to service the problems that people are facing, and as well it should. My organization is trying to do its part. Public Campaign Action Fund is trying to raise the issue of these contracts because, you know, in 2 months, we're not going to know. The contracts will be, many of them will be issued, and we're not going to know unless we raise a stink about it. So far, the Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security has agreed to investigate these no-bid contracts as they proceed. But no one's doing anything to stop the process from giving them out in the first place. and to create a streamlined competitive bidding process so it doesn't slow down the work, but certainly creates a little bit more oversight at the front end.
David, this is hardly a WPA, and I wanted you to just do some contrast about why it's not a WPA and what was the difference with FDR. I mean, after all, this is a president who says they're going to do investigation, they're going to monitor the situation of expenditures.
My hat is off to Paul Krugman, who wrote an incredible column for the New York Times last week that compared the relief and recovery program of the New Deal and what we're likely to see here with the post-Katrina work. And you know, certainly FDR knew that his mission wasn't simply to pass a program for Social Security or to get people back to work. It was also about to show that government activism could work, or government could be a force for good in people's lives. Now, I don't think anyone would attribute that sentiment to this president. This president and the ideology that he's written into office, it's more about dismantling those programs that that give people some help. And so in its place, President Bush has spent more time trying to place his cronies into positions of power so he can advance his political agenda. And so we see people like this Michael Brown at FEMA. We see people like this guy that got arrested today down in Washington, David Safavian, who's helping a lobbyist just buy discarded property through the General Services Administration. We see all this cronyism and corruption. And I can't imagine that President Bush is going to do the same thing that FDR did, which was to create a special division to investigate any corruption and root it out as it was happening. I think there may be a lot of finger-pointing after the fact, but the time to set the tone, the right tone, is from the outset, and to police these contracts and police how the money is spent now.
We're going to have to leave it there, unfortunately. We're going to have you back. We're going to discuss these things a great deal more. They're very important. The demands have to be on government. And they have to be government that deals with real housing opportunities, real jobs, jobs at prevailing, indeed, living wages, and so on. So we are now, we must be past the mourning and be in the process of reconstructing people's devastated lives. We've been speaking with David Donnelly. Quickly tell us the website in 6 seconds.
It's howdaretheydare.org, and thanks for having me.
How dare they, indeed. Howdaretheydare.org. We've been speaking with David Donnelly, National Campaigns Director for the Public Campaign Action Fund. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash, and it's Building Bridges.
Your Community and Labor Report.